Hi, I'm Jason Scott. I'm the host of iloveedmontonrealestate.com, and my guest today is Catherine Hobb. Catherine's a realtor with Yegg Property Pros. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me.
So you and I have known each other for an extremely long time, and I know you had a life before real estate. What got you into real estate?
So what got me into real estate was my own personal interest in real estate. So I purchased my first home when I was 22, which you know because you were my mortgage broker.
Yeah.
But I think when I purchased that property, I realized how good of an investment purchasing a home is and how it helps you get ahead in life.
How does it help you? Or what's your perception on how it helps you get ahead?
My perception of it was, first off, I had a secure place to stay. What originally drove us to purchase a house was we couldn't find anywhere to live that would allow our dogs. Mm-hmm. And then once we got in there, it was, we knew what our payments were. Mm-hmm. Our payments only ever went down on our home as we slowly built up equity. And then it gave us the freedom to use the property how we wanted it.
Right. And if I recall correctly, that first house, and you bought it with your husband, but that first house had a basement suite, so you guys were generating extra income, right?
Yeah. So when we purchased that one, we did have two renters in there, and they paid over half of our mortgage.
Right. So you lived upstairs, they were downstairs,
yes,
and they were subsidizing your home.
Basically. A huge chunk of it. They also made it really easy for me to work part-time or not work while I was in university completing my degree. So it really helped us in that way in terms of finances. Mm-hmm. So even though we had this mortgage, it never really held us back, mm-hmm, as a couple or getting ahead or doing the things that we needed extra money to do.
Right. Okay. So when was it in your real estate career that you were like, you know what, this really is for me. This is the right thing.
You know, I think I knew it a really, really long time ago before I even got into real estate. I don't know why I was fighting it as much as I did. But as soon as I sold my first house, that was when I knew this was what I wanted to do and this is what I wanted to focus on. No matter the ups and downs of the actual job and all the things that you have to go through, nothing makes me happier than closing a deal with a client and seeing how excited they are to take possession of their home.
Right. Or sell their home.
Yeah. If it's, if they're moving or upgrading or something along those lines.
Yeah. What was the first purchase or transaction like for you? Were there challenges with it or was it super easy?
Overall, my first transaction was fairly easy. It was a first-time home buyer looking to buy a condo, and it was kind of in the midst when there was a lot of competition. So, I mean, that was a little bit of a struggle dealing with a first-time home buyer, you know, where they're already a little bit hesitant to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I think just coaching her and showing her what the market was like and letting her make her own decisions and just guiding her rather than pushing her, we were able to find her nice quality condo that she's very happy in, because I have been doing my follow-ups with her and she's very happy where she's at.
Right. Okay. How many years have you been a realtor for now?
So I got licensed in March of 2022.
Okay. So you're coming up on 3 years.
2 years.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Hey, who's the mortgage broker with math around? That was mortgage broker math.
It's okay. That's what calculators are for.
Yeah, that's right. So you're on 2 years. Okay.
Yeah.
And so during that 2 years, what types of transactions or where are you sort of leaning towards in terms of a focus for your business?
So I really like working with first-time home buyers, mostly just because I think it's a very exciting transaction. I love helping people make that financial step from a renter to a homeowner. I think it's a really exciting transition in a person's life. So I like being a part of that. I've also worked with a couple of new or working towards being investors. Those are really exciting as well because I do take a personal interest in that. Mm-hmm. And I really like seeing people grow and I like learning with them. Mm-hmm. So that is another really exciting one for me.
One of the things you kind of alluded to when you were telling the story of that first buyer was sort of the psychology and sort of the concerns or, you know, you've got this dichotomy of excitement and fear.
Yes.
How do you approach that?
So coming from customer service for my background, when I first meet a client or a potential client, I really try to read them, I guess. Get a feel for the things that are making them nervous, the things that they're confident in, and then really listening to what they want beyond what they're saying. So sometimes people will be like, you know, I want criteria XYZ. And if you really listen to what they're talking about and about their lifestyle, you can kind of figure out more so what they really want, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So when it comes to that psychology, I just try to listen. I try to gauge the person for who they are and figure out how I can make, I guess, like a curated approach mm-hmm. to what works for them and what they're looking for.
Right.
So it's really focusing on an individualized approach for each client and their needs.
So one thing you said in your first, like the story of when you and your husband bought your home, is you had a couple of dogs and that was a deciding factor in which way you would go with a property. Obviously, lots of people have pets. What should they be considering?
So a couple of things with pets. If you're looking to buy a condo, it is incredibly important that you get an agent that understands that there are limitations on pets in condos. So one thing that I always like to write into contracts as one of our conditions is that if the animal doesn't get approved to live in the building, that we can walk away from the contract. Because I never want to be, or put a client, I guess, in a position where they have to make that choice, or where they're so excited, they go to take possession and then they find out they can't have their pet in that building.
Right. Yeah. Have you ever encountered that?
So I haven't. This is something that I pay really close attention to. Again, even with my contracts, I'm always looking to make sure that everything fits uniquely with that client. Mm-hmm. But I did recently have a sale and I thought it was a very interesting story. But the client had said that when she was looking to purchase her first home, the agent told her not to worry about condo dogs, bylaws, anything like that. And she did actually have a large dog. Mm-hmm. And when she went to take possession about a week before, she ended up finding out there were no dogs allowed in the building. So she had to back out of the deal. And the problem here is she would have lost her $10,000 deposit and she could have been held liable too. So
liable for losses if they couldn't sell for the same price.
100%. Yeah. So she was put in a very bad situation. Luckily, it was sorted out for her and she got off like no liability. She got her deposit back. But I think that's one of those scenarios where she really lucked out mm-hmm. and, you know, she would have been put in a very bad position potentially and risked losing all of her deposit if she wanted to keep her dog with her.
Right. And so, like, as an example for dogs, it can be based on size or breed or what?
So it depends on the board, but I mean, size is a really, really big one. So there's typically, you're looking at a weight limit. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they don't say this too often. They won't actually discriminate against certain breeds, but you can have a much harder time looking for getting a dog that's accepted, that's a bully breed, a German Shepherd, anything that has a bit of a bad reputation.
Right.
In terms of how they are around people.
Right. It's kind of funny. They'll also do it based on, say, the height of the dog at the shoulders, yeah. right? So maybe you have a Great Dane, right?
Yeah.
Massive dog, but they're actually total couch potatoes.
Yeah.
And they will, you know, not be making lots of noise, et cetera, but they get discriminated against based on size.
100%. Yeah. And then, you know, look at me, I've got two Pomeranians and they should almost be discriminated against.
Are they yappy?
They're just a little bit sometimes. They're vocal.
So do cat owners run into the same issues?
Not as often, but I mean, even if you want to have a hamster, I highly recommend that this is something that you share with your agent when you're shopping for anything that might have a restriction.
Right. Aquariums, obviously, there'd be weight issues with the aquarium and all sorts
100%,
of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Which I guess if you are a pet owner, and I would assume most pet owners would lean towards a property with a yard rather than an apartment condo, right?
It depends. I mean, we have our price points and we have to do our best to work with that price point, right? Mm-hmm. However, I do feel that the majority of people that I work with, particularly that have dogs, mm-hmm. are looking for something with a fenced yard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me about the most frustrating experience or frustrating scenario you ran into as a realtor.
The most frustrating one?
Yeah. Or the most recent one.
Honestly, sometimes it's just communicating with other agents, as much as I maybe should not be saying that. That's usually the biggest problem that I come into is, you know, we are in an industry where there's so many different personalities. And I have my own particular way of doing my job. And then there's others that have different ways. And sometimes you meet agents that you just, it's oil and water. Mm. Your ways of doing a job do not mesh. And sometimes that could be the most frustrating part, is just learning how to work with this one particular individual to make sure that the transaction goes smoothly and the clients are happy on both sides.
Right. Okay. Was there ever a specific scenario where a deal blew up for some crazy reason?
I've had a deal almost blow up, and this was actually a really interesting one. So I did have a deal. It was a listing. And something ended up popping up on title after I had listed it.
Oh.
So we had a, yes.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So, I mean, my understanding is when a realtor gets a listing, you pull title.
Yes.
To see who owns the property, see if there's a mortgage, etc.
Yeah.
Okay.
So before I list a property, I always pull the title and make sure that there's nothing on it. If there is anything on it, I clarify it with the sellers, or we work on getting those items removed. Mm-hmm. So this instance, unfortunately, it was added after the fact.
Okay.
However, when you go to purchase a property as a buyer's agent, you should still be pulling the title again before mm-hmm. you even write the offer. So this was one of those instances where the buyer's agent did not pull title. Mm-hmm. So I was unaware. I don't pull title again, right? Mm-hmm. The next time title gets pulled is with the lawyers. Mm-hmm. So lawyers go, pull title. I get a call and I find out there is now a caveat on there.
Okay. And a caveat is like a warning or a, hey, someone has registered an interest in this property for some reason.
Yes. And typically when we have these, we can't actually go through with the sale. So this was posing a lot of issues. And, you know, had that agent pulled title when he was supposed to, we would have known this and we could have dealt with it at the time and made arrangements. We ended up getting everything sorted out. We had some really good lawyers on the deal, but this was one of those, it literally up to closing day, it almost blew apart. It was every day people working, stressing out, calling lawyers, trying to make sure everything was fixed. Because the worst part about it was the caveat on title was not even justified. It was a dispute between two people. And the people that put the caveat on title had no right.
Huh. Interesting. And just so people know, like land titles is months behind. Last I had heard was 4 months. Maybe it's shorter now. But what can happen is someone registers a claim against a property, or there's a change in ownership, etc. And it's taking quite a while for the land titles office to update the titles.
Yes.
So that's how you ran into the scenario where you pulled title. It could have been the next day that it got registered.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't show up for 2 or 3 or 4 months, right?
100%. Yeah. So that did kind of put us in a sticky spot. But again, you know, having the right professionals involved in the deal, we did end up getting everything fixed and everybody was happy in the end.
Right.
That's all that matters.
Yeah. Dodged a bullet.
Hey. Yeah.
What's the best real estate advice you've ever received, either as a owner of real estate or a realtor?
The best real estate advice I can think of is honestly a couple of things. First off, you don't have to go to your absolute max budget. If you were approved for $500,000 and you know, the numbers seem tight for you, you don't have to buy a house that's $500,000. That's the point of buying property. You buy one and you can build up some equity and then buy another one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just this second piece is honestly, like, just get into the market. I see so many people hum and haw because they want to buy a property, but they're only approved for this much. And it's like, okay, so buy an apartment or a townhouse or a starter home.
Yeah. Right? There's nothing wrong with any of those options.
Yeah. Right? Your first home doesn't have to have a basketball court and six bathrooms. Like, right. Let's be realistic. Yeah. Right. So I think that people just need to be proud, first off, that you can even buy a home, because not everybody can do that. So that's a huge achievement right there. And to not let, I guess, vanity and ego get in the way of taking that next step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I have to say, for most of my clients, you know, we do the calculation on what they can afford. Most people seem to not go to the max, which is a good thing. And that's, quote unquote, the max based on the stress test. So there is a bit of wiggle room in there. But the reality is, you know, there's real life costs that aren't factored into whether or not you can qualify for a mortgage on a property. You know, the big one being like daycare. So if you're a young family, you can easily spend as much on daycare as a mortgage.
Yeah.
Right? So no one wants to be eating Mr. Noodles out of necessity, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good that you counsel people to, you know, not go to the wire.
Yeah. And I mean, again, too, like on the other side of that, you do see people that will get frustrated because they only get approved for so much, but they're like, I'm paying more than this in rent right now. Mm. So I can afford more. So they think they'll get a bigger down payment, or because they still want that house. It's like, just start somewhere.
Yeah.
My starter home was not pretty.
Yeah.
I look back at it now and I'm like, I don't know if I could ever live in a property like that ever again, personally. But I'm still so happy that I bought it, and I was so happy while I was in that home. And then I think it was still such a surprise for my husband and I how much, like, our jump in terms of what we were allowed or what we were pre-approved for our next property. So I think that's really important. And I see that with tons of clients too. It's like they're only pre-approved for 100 or 200 for their first property, and then they sell that house and buy another one, and they're so much happier with what they're able to afford. So I think the really important thing is just getting into the market, as long as you can buy a home that works for your lifestyle in your price range.
Right. Because if you do buy one, I mean, let's face it, there are some hard costs for selling a property. There's realtor commissions, there's lawyer fees, there's payout penalties if you know, you need to break your mortgage for whatever reason. So if someone's going to buy to get in, how long do you think they should own that property before they even think about selling?
I think it really depends on how much they're putting down and how much equity they've built up in the home. Again, lifestyle really is such an important factor, because if you were in a home, you know, and in 3 years, you know, you have surprised two kids or a kid, or now you have pets or you're moving, I mean, there's always going to be instances where you need to make changes that are maybe not the best. That being said, you really need to just look at the numbers and see if it works. You need to sit down with an agent, find out what your costs are going to be to sell, and see if that works for you to reach your next goal. I don't think there's necessarily a predetermined amount of time that you absolutely need to wait. I've seen people buy a house and sell it the next year and make huge profit. So I don't think a timeline is specific.
Now, those people weren't necessarily trying to do a flip.
That is just, you know, because you can't really time the market, but they bought at the right time.
Yeah.
And then when they go to sell, their property has increased.
Right.
So I did see this recently with a seller who had purchased a home in a newer area. While she was there, the area exploded. Mm-hmm. So it made her price go way up, right? Because there was so much more demand for the area now that they had amenities in place.
Right. Okay. So Catherine, if you look at, say, your last 5 or 10 transactions, are there any sort of themes that you're seeing develop?
I'm starting to see a few more clients push a little bit further out. So I'm seeing a lot more deals kind of in the Edmonton area. So I'm getting a lot more clients looking in Gibbons, Mortonville, Spruce, Sherwood Park, anywhere to get them a little bit more value for their dollar. Because I do find Edmonton is, I mean, still one of the most affordable cities in all of Canada. That being said, it is getting quite expensive. So a lot of the younger couples, first-time home buyers that I'm working with, seem to be making that little bit of a sacrifice by going out of their comfort zone. So people that grew up in Edmonton deciding to move out to Spruce Grove or move out to Morinville.
Right.
Because they can get that little bit more value. So if they're not willing to settle on maybe an older home that needs some renovations, they can go to Spruce or Morinville and they get a brand new home or a renovated home for close to the same price.
Or maybe more land or whatever.
Or a bigger lot, bigger yard, right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so Catherine, what do you see happening with prices in and around Edmonton this year?
So I see them going up. Biggest reasons is we are getting so many buyers from out of province. So we have a ton of people coming from BC and Ontario, and they're moving here because they're priced out of the markets there. You know, so they're starting a new life here, and they are more than happy to pay the prices that are listed here.
Yeah. House here, it's like a down payment there.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So we're getting a lot of migration from other provinces. We're getting a lot more immigration as well. I know that there's some new projects starting in Fort Saskatchewan, so I'm sure that will be bringing up prices kind of North Edmonton and those areas as people come for jobs again. And then if we see a little bit more reduction in interest rates, we're going to start seeing those people that originally couldn't get into the market might be able to afford to now, right?
That's right.
So we have all these things compounding, and they're slowly, I don't think we're going to see crazy increases, but I think we will see at least like a 5% increase overall across the board.
5%. That's pretty healthy.
Yeah.
I would say historically, that's where Edmonton would have been now. I mean, the last 10 years, it's been pretty flat, but that's because, you know, 2005, 2006, part of 2007 were absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And prices doubled, right? And then there was this big, long hangover effect.
Well, I think the other thing too, actually, I forgot to mention is I'm noticing a lot of, I actually just had clients that were like this, basically renters, and they had a rental increase.
Oh,
they
yeah.
said for the price that their rent was going up, it wasn't worth renting anymore. So there we have one more buyer in the market now.
That's a function of landlords having to increase the rent because their mortgage payments are going up. So if they're in a variable rate, the payments have gone up. Or if that mortgage came up for renewal and they were in a fixed rate at, say, 2.5%, and now they're looking at 5%, of course the landlord's going to pass on the higher increase.
Plus, we also have seen huge jumps in property tax as well. So that's another cost, right?
Yeah. So it will definitely push some renters to being owners. So.
Yeah, which is maybe a good thing for them.
Yeah, for sure. Why not? So, Catherine, I always like to ask this question, and it's basically another way of saying, how do you find a good realtor? So, you know, let's say you had a family member moving to another city or someone in another city selling. How would you recommend they pick a realtor out of all the realtors that are out there?
So I think the most important thing would be finding a realtor that matches your type of communication. The biggest complaint with agents is that they don't communicate properly. So I actually talked to a client recently who had done a sale a couple years ago and then purchased with me. And they said they didn't realize how much, I guess they didn't like their last agent, because there wasn't enough communication. They said they'd ask a question and then the agent wouldn't contact them again until they had the answer. Or, you know, if the agent couldn't answer a question, they would not look for the answer. They'd just be like, oh, I don't know. Or they'd give kind of a guess answer.
Right. Very vague, not really answering the question.
Yeah. I think it's very important to get an agent that has the same communication style. So even another thing to consider is if you prefer communicating by phone, make sure that you have an agent that is okay communicating by phone. If you prefer communicating by text or email, this is something that I think should be like the first thing asked in an interview with an agent. Because if you don't have that communication down, that's when things start to go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I would recommend is honestly just getting an agent too that's on an here's the millennial in me, same vibe as you.
Okay, what do you mean by the same vibe as
you? So same vibes, you're going to be spending a lot of time with this person. Okay. And regardless of how good they are or aren't at their job, if you hate every moment that you're spending with them and you don't like talking to them and they're just getting under your skin or you, anything like that, you're not going to have a good time.
Right.
At the end of the day, you do want to find an agent that you're comfortable with, that you're comfortable asking questions, and that you can laugh a little, because it's a stressful situation and you want to make sure that not only are you confident in your agent representing you and helping you, guiding you through this, but that, you know, you're going to have a good time doing it.
Right. Okay. That's really good. Catherine, is there anything else you want to say just to wrap up the show and leave some final thoughts for listeners?
The last thing I kind of want to talk about is just setting realistic expectations. So I think we can kind of attribute this to buyers, sellers, investors, first-time home buyers. You just need to be really realistic going into a purchase like this. It is, I don't care if you're buying a $100,000 property or $1 million property, it is going to be at least a little bit stressful. And it's a big purchase. It's a lot of money.
Right.
And I think the most times I see people get disappointed is just not being realistic with their expectations, thinking that they can get more than that they actually can.
Right.
Or thinking that it's going to be a lot easier than it really is.
Right. Or thinking they can steal the deal and get a property for tens of thousands of dollars under the asking price.
Exactly. So like going back to another client that I had, again, first-time home buyer. These always seem to be the learning ones. I think once you've been through one transaction, you're a little bit more prepared. And, you know, I love seeing this, but they were shopping with their dad and very protective. It's great to see, but I think that dad was a little too overprotective. So he wanted the best deal, the best house, the best everything. And he was setting really unrealistic expectations for his child. And, or I guess look like an adult child, but
yeah, I know what you mean.
And that's fair. I get it. You know, it's nice to see someone that's protective like that. But we did end up losing out on a couple of properties because they wanted that better deal. And, you know, they wanted everything fixed, you know, loose tap. Let's get that 100%. We need that fixed, or we need $500 off because the tap is loose. So I think it's being really realistic about your price point. You know, if you're going in, you're buying a house at, you know, $300,000 to $400,000, chances are something's going to come up in the inspection.
Sure.
You know, if the market is busy and, you know, this is a really great property in your price point, chances are a lot of other people are going to be interested in it too.
Yeah,
so don't hum and haw. Don't try to get a deal. You're already getting a deal, right? So just setting those expectations and being ready to work within them, I guess.
Awesome. Catherine Hobb with Yaig Property Pros, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.